Now let's talk about the chances of a political meltdown. President Obama says the United States could be facing a fiscal emergency if Republicans and Democrats cannot work out the deals on the budget and the debt ceiling. He has summoned congressional leaders to the White House for face-to-face meetings tomorrow. The top two members of each party and each chamber of Congress, the so-called Big Eight, will gather at the White House.
It's my hope that everybody's going to leave their ultimatums at the door. That we'll all leave our political rhetoric at the door, and that we're going to do what's best for our economy and do what's best for our people.
NPR's Andrea Seabrook is tracking the budget negotiations.
There's a lot of he said, she said going on, bickering, blaming, bludgeoning. So it's useful to take a moment and just remind ourselves of the big picture here. The financial world is already kind of skittish. The markets haven't tanked, but investors are on alert. They're still recovering their confidence from some pretty hard shakes in 2007 and 8. Now they're watching other countries, especially Greece, deal with the effects of too much government debt built up over years of spending. And then they look at the U.S. The federal government is borrowing 40 cents of every dollar it spends. The debt tops $14 trillion, and the benefits the government has promised to people who are retiring cost way more than it can afford. Investors see serious work that needs to be done, but the people who have to do this work, that is, members of Congress, aren't necessarily acting so serious.
That is almost so irresponsible that it is frightening.
Former Congressman John Tanner, a Democrat from Tennessee, he finds it jaw-dropping that some lawmakers continue to say that the U.S. can just nip and tuck here and there or find some easy solution and things will be just fine. The problem is much bigger than that, and there's no time to mess around, says Tanner.
This debt ceiling business is a live fire exercise. They're not shooting blanks.
At the Concord Coalition, a fiscally conservative think tank in Washington, chief economist Diane Lim Rogers says lawmakers may actually be making the problem worse with their rhetoric.
You know, all show, a lot of theatrics, a lot of hype. It doesn't help the cause because it makes the American people think, oh, it's just politics.
It's not politics, says Rogers. It's real. And if lawmakers can't get together and fix this problem, the U.S. could lose its status as the most stable of the world's economies. That would hurt everybody in the country. Okay, so Congress should go fix that, right? Well, that's where we are now. The Democrats, says Rogers, are saying,
maybe we can just tax rich people or evil corporations, or maybe we don't have to cut major benefit programs. Maybe we can just cut out waste, fraud, and abuse.
On the other side, Republicans are saying the only solution they'll accept is spending cuts, and they will not consider ending tax breaks for corporations or raising taxes of any kind. None of this sits well with John Kasich. He's the Republican governor of Ohio, and he was chairman of the House Budget Committee when he balanced the budget with President Clinton in the 1990s. Kasich told CBS that lawmakers must drop all the posturing and ideological orthodoxy.
At the end of the day, you look yourself in the mirror, and you say to yourself, did I do what was right for families and for children? And if I paid a political price, so what?
That's the kind of attitude the president wants in his meeting on Thursday. Come to the White House, he says, but leave your rhetoric at the door. Andrea Seabrook, NPR News, Washington.
Now we're going to hear about some huge costs associated with an even longer running crisis, home foreclosures. In May alone, nearly 70,000 homes were repossessed around the country, according to the firm Realty Track. Fannie Mae, the government-sponsored mortgage lender, has been left holding a lot of those repossessed homes. NPR's Tamara Keith tells us how Fannie Mae is trying to keep all of the homes it now owns looking presentable.
When you own 153,000 homes, even little things get expensive fast, like mowing the lawn. At this foreclosed townhouse in Lanham, Maryland, two men swoop in, quickly mowing and edging the small front yard. Fannie Mae owns this home, and it's paying for the lawn crew to come every 2 weeks or so to keep up the curb appeal. But it's not just this lawn. Fannie Mae officials won't say exactly how many lawns it's paying to maintain, but it's a lot. Say only half of the homes have lawns, a conservative estimate. That's still more than 75,000. Multiply that by a six-month grass clipping season, mowing twice a month at, say, $40 a mow. And rough estimate here, Fannie Mae is spending something like $36 million a year just to mow the lawns at the homes it now owns.
Mow, water, prune, clean the gutters, and sweep the walk, and on and on and on.
Karen Petru watches Fannie Mae's books closely at her firm Federal Financial Analytics.
This is just one of the costs that Fannie and the rest of us will pay to dig out of a very big hole.
When she says the rest of us, she means it. Fannie Mae's tab from U.S. taxpayers is up to $86 billion since September of 2008, when the mortgage giant was taken into government conservatorship. In just the first quarter of this year, Fannie racked up $488 million in foreclosure-related expenses. To get a sense of how that adds up, let's go back to that townhouse in Lanham, Maryland.
We will be investing approximately $15,000 in this asset in order to repair it.
Alonda Crockett is an executive at Fannie Mae who deals with managing its massive portfolio of foreclosed properties. She shows me around the house. It's in full-blown repair mode.
And you can see we're replacing the shower surround and the doors. We'll also paint in here and replace the vinyl.
Using a subcontractor, Fannie will get this house ready to sell. Chipped, bold paint colors are covered with a neutral tone. A stolen air conditioning unit and missing copper pipes are replaced. New light fixtures and wall-to-wall carpeting are installed. Crockett says the idea here is to stabilize neighborhoods and to get properties to a place where first-time homebuyers can imagine themselves moving in.
We want to make sure that we're comparable with the market or with the neighborhood, and we want to make sure that we can maximize our return on the investment.
In 2010, Fannie Mae did similar repairs on 87,000 foreclosed homes. Guy Sakala, the publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance, says these days Fannie is the nation's largest owner of homes, and as a result, it's,
I think, undisputedly the largest purchaser of paint and general appliances for these homes they're fixing up.
Sakala says Fannie Mae has long set the gold standard for dealing with foreclosed homes.
Real estate agents list properties and they brag about them being Fannie Mae foreclosures or repairs.
Paid for with taxpayer dollars. But if you think mowing tens of thousands of lawns and buying hundreds of acres of new carpet is expensive, Karen Petru of Federal Financial Analytics says just imagine the alternative.
If they don't maintain the houses, then the neighborhoods go downhill. Other people are put at risk, and the housing crisis gets worse because you have still more downward pressure on overall house prices.
Fannie Mae expects to be in the homeowning, lawn mowing, house repairing business for some time to come. It says it will take years to get the number of foreclosed homes on its books back to pre-crisis levels. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. For the past few days, thousands of people have been submitting questions on Twitter with the hashtag AskObama. Today, the president answered some of those questions in what the White House dubbed its first Twitter town hall. NPR's Ari Shapiro was in the White House East Room for the tweets.
President Obama has done town hall meetings with Facebook and YouTube. Today, it was Twitter's turn, and he opened it with a first.
I am going to make history here as the first president to live tweet.
On a laptop with a presidential seal, he typed out his question to the American people. It popped up on a large screen.
In order to reduce the deficit, what costs would you cut and what investments would you keep?
At the end of the town hall, the president responded to some Twitter users' answers to that question. In the intervening hour, he talked about jobs, education, the debt ceiling, even space travel. The questions were all 140 characters max. The answers, no such limit.
One last point. I know, Twitter, I'm supposed to be short, but
Twitter founder Jack Dorsey moderated the conversation. At one point, Dorsey pulled up a tweet from one of President Obama's new golfing buddies, House Speaker John Boehner.
After embarking on a record-speaking spending binge that left us deeper in debt, where are the jobs?
The president called it a slightly skewed question. He accused Republicans of blocking investments in infrastructure and other areas that the White House believes could create jobs.
We haven't gotten the kind of cooperation that I'd like to see on some of those ideas and initiatives, but I'm just going to keep on trying, and eventually I'm sure the speaker will see the light.
The president also said Boehner is falling down on the job by threatening not to raise the federal debt ceiling.
Congress has a responsibility to make sure we pay our bills. We've always paid them in the past. The notion that the U.S. is going to default on its debt is just irresponsible.
That's an accusation President Obama can level at the House Speaker in person when Boehner visits the White House for negotiations tomorrow. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, The White House.